Succession number 28896, Reel 17.
Mr. Blewitt, Reel 17. A few more questions about the ducks, Mr. Blewitt. What about the different pressures, the tyre pressures? I mean, sometimes you're operating on sand, sometimes on hard tarmac. How was that done?
When you were going on landings, for instance, when we went from Africa to Sicily, the tyres were sort of let down to a certain pressure. I can't remember what they were. Really soft. So if they didn't know what sort of beach you were landing on, so that they were, when you landed, and they spread out a bit, you were plodding along. If you knew where if they'd been reconnoitred, and they knew what sort of beach you were on, if it was hard or pebbly or whatever, you just had the normal pressures. But I must admit, because it was a bit haphazard. We weren't. The idea of the tyre pressures, there was supposed to be a gadget on them where you could fit it up and go around and work it off the engine. And
that's for blowing them up.
Blowing the tyres up, the pressures, which was all right. But it was. You can imagine that if you were coming off or just landing on a beach, the beach master didn't want you around messing around with tyre pressure. He wanted you off. That was his favourite expression. Get off the beach. Get off. Go. It didn't matter where you went, as long as you cleared his beach. So you'd go along and you'd maybe get onto a good road and you'd have to stop and do this business with the tyre pressure. So I must admit, as far as I was concerned personally, I'd try and get away with letting the tyres down. Had chance it getting on the beach, and if you hit a good road, you were aware. You know, you didn't have to. It all depended where you were going anywhere. And plus the fact, if you had, like when we went into from Sicily into Italy, we took the Canadians in, and they didn't want to be messing about while you pumped your tyres up, so I left the tyres as they were and chanced it, and it was all right, we got on. Took them up farther up where we just dumped them all, and then went.
What kind of implements were carried on the duck? You know, you obviously you need a number of implements for different tasks.
Well, we had a shovel. Dig yourself out of trouble if there was anything like that. We had different tools on, but they were very more or less self-supporting, if you like. It's the usual things you get on a wagon, grease guns. The grease gun was a great thing because you used to have to keep the all the joints and whatnot, try to keep them as waterproof as possible. So you were using your grease gun every day, near enough. It happened to me once that the rudder on the duck, I was coming back from a ship and I was steering and I wasn't going the way I was supposed to do. So what the hell is wrong with this? And he said, first time it happened. And so what you do in that case, engage your wheels, and the wheels were taking you in. And then as soon as you got on the beach, you get out and have a look and see where your rudder was, and there it wasn't. You know, so that explained it, why the steering was. And in them days, this was at Anzio when that happened to me, and we didn't have, well, you're supposed to go up to the workshops, but we didn't have a lot of spares. Different to the Yanks, if anything untowards happened to any of their ducks, they used to just take it to a dump, well, a dump, and that was it, and just dump it and go and get another one. So what happened in them at that time, and it come regular practice, we'd go up to their dump for whatever you wanted. As I did, I went up and took a rudder off one of theirs, abandoned one, fitted it onto mine, and that was it. away we went. And that's what happened with a lot. They used to cannibalise their equipment to keep ours going. Same war, different. The Yanks used to laugh about that. God damn you, Shoemaker, hard work of this war, you know. But that's what it used to be. We used to get stuff off their ducks just to keep ours running.
And were you trained to maintain them in that way? You could, you know, you could take these.
Oh yes, they just, if you went in and whatever was wrong, get away up the dump and see if you can get one something off there, and then, or if you went to your own workshops, the Jack Dawson, the staff sergeant there, he'd say, "Have you first words were, have you been up to the dump, you know, to get it? Well, get away up there and see if I can get it. Fetch it back and then we'll sort it." Yeah.
The effect of sea and the salt and the sea and the sand must have made maintenance
rusted. You rose rusted up.
So you'd have to maintain it regularly.
You were supposed to, and it paid you to, really. Take the wheels off now and again, bang plenty of grease and whatnot on before you put the nuts on. We had a little wheel brace about that big.
About what, 2 feet?
It was either, 18 inches, 2 foot, that's about it. So what we used to do, everybody, I don't know where these bars come from, pieces of tubing about 4 foot long, which used to fit onto them, and then two or three of you could bang on them to get your wheels, and with the hammer as well. The funniest thing I ever saw was I was on guard, and in the distance I've seen these look like fireworks coming down the road, like a spinning wheel, you know, a firework spinning wheel. And when it got a bit nearer, I realised it was a duck with the wheels on fire. Well, they weren't all on fire, and it was coming round, and so it pulled in, and we chucked water on it to get the tyre and that down, and then there was about three or four of us with the quarter hammer, and these were pulling to get his tyre off. So it was that was the only time I saw one actually on fire, but it paid you in that case. As far as maintenance was concerned, it paid you. There was always a big tin of grease, and you used to slop it on haphazard and anyway, keep it going, you know, take the nuts off, grease on, back end, and all around the seams of where the bodywork, you used to always paint, slap the paint on, like, you know, just really not meant it look better, just to make it more waterproof, because it used to take a bit of water in.
What would be the, it's a difficult question, what would be the average life of a duck in operations, constantly in operation?
Well, as far as, again, personally, I was tripping down the Grand Canal with a chap from, well, he was a sergeant, I think he was a New Zealander from the Hotel Daniele. I always remember the Hotel Daniele because it was a good spot to go to when you went there. And he picked the New Zealand representative up, went to the dump and got all his stuff, take it back to the Daniele. And he used to have one or two blokes to unload it and take it in. And you used to go in and get your dinner there, and you used to always come with a tray of beer, about 10 glasses, not pints, glasses, and that's yours, you know. They sort of expect you to say, "I can't drink all that, I'll never drive that thing back." Well, just drink what you can. So this happened, I'd just dumped him, and I was making my way back to the Lido, and all of a sudden it just went like that. Thought, what the hell is wrong here? Never happened before. Messed about. Well, there was always ducks up and down, fortunately. So I just shouted one of them that was going back my way, and got tied up with him and went back up. And we had workshops on there, and he towed me back to the workshops. And I had no idea what had happened. I just told him. He said, "Oh, it'll be the main shaft or something." and that was it. And that was the only weed, Adam, that was going from practicing on in Africa, on the Sicily landing, or when we went to Malta, practicing there, from there to Sicily across the straits to, we went across the straits 5 mile, and we went across there, and all the time up and down. So as far as the life was concerned, I had a certainly good life out of that one. And then I had to take it to a place just outside, toward again, to a place called Mestre, just outside Venice, where we had the main workshops. And then it was put in there, and I had to stay with it, doing little menial jobs like grinding plugs and stuff like that, so before, while they come down with the, from another depot, so back down there, till I got it fixed up again. So I was away about...
In your training, did you get any training in seamanship? I mean, you were both drivers and you were at sea.
Yes, when we got allocated about, I think it would be about 4 or 5 blokes who were not seamen, but watermen, that's what they call them. And in my pay book, when we finished, that was what I was classed as, a waterman, second class. They just used to, not so much driving, more for knots, tying knots and stuff like that, which we never bothered with. They were a complete waste of time. We used to think they were just scrounging around. You're supposed to show you all sorts. But it was just knots, tying up and all that. Well, we used to tie it up anyway before they come, and we used to, that was another thing we had. I forgot to say that. As far as tools were concerned, we had an axe, a spade and an axe. And so if you went out to sea, tied up to the ships, you know, and then the water and not, and you maybe couldn't get in, couldn't get away, out would come the axe and just chop your way through the knot. So we still used quite a bit of rope that way. But as far as seamanship was, you just learned it as you went along. You learned more off that American captain than any of those.
Were you trained to load it yourselves as well as necessary?
Well, you had to. You were responsible for the load, so it was up to you to say. We had a net. When you had to go out the ships, and they used to use the derricks and whatnot, and had a net. So nearly every dock had an empty net to start with. And you went out with the idea, filled it up, come down, and you went to dropped it just nice in the dock. If you didn't drop it in the right place, you had a chance to go in like this, you know. So when you got to the dump, there was also another. This was actually fixed onto the dock. It was like a three-point thing.
A winch of some kind.
And winched it off. Every dock had a winch, but every now and then you had to take your turn of going up to the dump. And so at the finish, what they did, they had this particular dock fitted up with a winch and the hoist, and you just went up and you did it for the day and went back on your own. You used to come in, take the loaded net out of the duck that come. He used to move off, and used to just drop it down, and there used to be pioneers and whatnot loading it up and making it. It was a real boring job, that one, when you were doing that all day long. Used to get it because you had to look at the back, so some bright wag, they'd got a mirror from somewhere, and a mirror about 4 foot, so he could just look in the mirror. He'd sit there maybe reading the latest news from the 8th Army News, and just pressing buttons, and up. That was, it's very good, but it was boring.
How manoeuvrable was the vehicle itself? How manoeuvrable was it at sea?
Well, it wasn't too manoeuvrable, but it would only do about 6 knots on the water. But you were just podding along. But you were all, you know, if you you, with the rudder and everything, it was all right. You get alongside the ship, and that's as near as what you want to be, and tie up while they got the derrick working, and there was engineers and whatnot on the boat, and they were doing other dock work, like, you know, down. Whoa, right, drop it, undo the, and away you used to go. It was all right. They were quite, you know, all you had to do was go from the ship to the shore, so you couldn't go very far wrong. When we went on the landing of from Sicily to Italy, we had a Navy officer in the first dock going by the
compass.
Everybody had a compass on the dock. Where we were supposed to be going, it would generally follow that, like follow the wagon, you were following the dock, unless you were on a special job. So all we did was just, we're in a line, followed the Navy officer who could read the compass, and we knew where we were going, like, you know.
What about the effect of higher seas, and, you know, at what point would you not be able to go to sea?
Well, if you went out and as the weather got worse, as it sometimes did, you come back half drowned, because it was, in them days, we never used to have the canvas top on, and there was nothing at the back. We had the canvas was rolled up and left. And as I said before, when we first went, we used to make living accommodation out of these with the canvas. So, no, you know, it didn't have no, it was all open. And so when the waves started to come over the top, like, and get, you start to, you'd say, well, it won't be, it's impossible, like, get over there. And of course, the ducks alongside the ship were going up and down like yo-yo. You get the thing and you say, right-o, and the next minute you'd be going down. And your load was up there, so if they dropped it quick, it wasn't very nice. So you had to have your wits about, like that, play with tide and whatnot.
But at some point you would be unable to go to sea.
Oh, yes, there was once or twice when it was too rough. But not always. They used to send you out most of the time, whether it was rough or not. But, because, like I say, we were the only means of getting stuff into the onto the land. There was no port.
You mentioned on the last tape that the petrol tins were
leaking.
Did you not get the German jerry cans, ultimately, the stronger tin?
We didn't get the jerry cans till later on, when the war was just about finished. We used to get these. When we got to... where was it? Just before we changed over to the tanks, we started getting the jerry cans. Before we changed over to the Buffalo tanks, previous to that, it was all, especially when you were on the lorries, the African campaign was all leaking tins. There was no jerry cans then.
What date did you join the ducks?
Well, it was when the campaign in Africa had finished. We were still on the lorries, and we come down to this place, Sousse, and then they had a meeting to say that the company was getting split up, and half were going with the lorries and the other half on these ducks, which we'd never heard of. There was two platoons, which one of which was mine, and the others, they just bye-bye, and away they went. God knows where they went. I did meet up with one or two of them in Venice, funny enough, later on, but they just went. And they said, right, we'll go up to the railhead and pick these ducks up. It was just outside Tunis, so...
Yeah, we have that, where you pick them up and you looked over them, etc. How long were you at Sousse?
Not very long. It seemed to be a long time.
could have been there a couple of months, I would think.
Now, what happened to you next when you left there?
Sorry?
What happened to you next after Sousse?
Well, we went from there to Malta.
How did you travel to Malta?
On the LSTs, Yankee thing. And then we were in Malta for about 3 or 4 weeks, I think.
Were you ducks on the LST?
We went on them, and then you went off at the other end, training again.
And crewed by an American crew? American
ship. Well.
What are your memories of that journey? Have you any?
Well, we weren't on long, very long. But it was a bit... it was all right getting on, because they come right up. Again, a marvellous thing, those LCTs and LSTs and the landing craft. Just drove on, that was no problem. It was when you drove off that sometimes you'd be hit in the bow. Unless you got... Malta was all right, because we did the same thing there. You drove straight onto the port, the LST store, so you just went on and went around to the camp where we first started to go to sit with sandfly fever and things like that. But after all the time in Africa, when nobody seemed to get bothered about getting sick, and they were starting going down like flies, quite a few of them. And the heat was terrible. It seemed to be more so than Africa. So you were getting up. When I say getting up, you were under canvas. So you were more or less... I think it was about 6 o'clock in the morning, the Rivali. And you were going to... You got a hasty breakfast, then you weren't supposed to go out and maintain the ducks. Until about 10 o'clock, and then you have a rest period because the heat was that bad, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, whatever. And it used to, half the time I must admit, I used to stay underneath the duck out of the sun and go to sleep.
What was your first impressions of Malta?
First impressions were they didn't like us, even though they had a Malta garrison and whatnot. I didn't blame them when I found out that they'd been getting bombed to hell. Jerry planes used to be over, not so much when we were there, but previous to that, and they took a real battering, and they weren't very happy to see us. They thought, I think at one time, so we were told, that they were ready for surrendering, because it was a bad spot. They were relying on the Navy to fetch stuff in for them, and there was the aircraft, I think, at the time was practically nil. In fact, I think there was a picture made about it, Faith Open Charity or something, I think they call them. But you could always tell the Malta garrison they were all immaculate, with having the uniforms cleaned and pressed by the locals. And we were just the opposite.
Did you see a lot of the damage? Obviously, you must
have. Yes. We were allowed time off, because they knew there was something coming off. And... that was the only time I ever saw Montgomery, was in Malta. We were just going down the street, there was about 3 or 4 of us. And somebody said, "There's Monty." So we took a great interest in the shop window as he passed, so we didn't have to all salute him, whatnot. But somebody, and he just normal thing like. Because he didn't go across on a duck. But I did have photographs of him getting off the duck, so he was quite happy with them. But Yeah, when we went our time off, when we used to go into Malta, the main part, and the letter, and seeing they did quite a bit of damage there. The only thing that I didn't like about them, water was very scarce on the island, and we used to have to, there was a big, like a rubber, like a tank now, like kids have, and used to have to use your seawater tablets to put in and drink it. It was terrible. And there was a, we found a cafe where there was no beer, but you could you get a glass of lemonade. When it was say lemonade, it was made there out of. Apparently, he had this cafe owner, he had like a well, and he used to charge us 1 and 6 a glass for this orange juice. It was lovely to drink, but 1 and 6 a glass, we were only getting 10 and 6 a week, so I think there was a few making a bob or two out of the troops there while we were there.
And the civilian population, did they relate to you at all?
Well, there was buses going around the island, and the sort of kept themselves to themselves, really. They didn't want the daughters or anything like that fraternizing with the English. So it wasn't a it wasn't uncommon to see a soldier or a serviceman, a Navy bloke, going down the street with a girlfriend, with a mother, an aunt, and one or two more in tow behind. They never went on their own. You used to always watch them like hawks, you know. It was amusing, that really, but.